I am Planta on the line. This is thecommentary.ca. In the midst of these Olympic Games, we look at how the media has covered them and Vancouver. Joe Cutbirth is an assistant professor at the Graduate School of Journalism at UBC. He is an award-winning journalist and media critic, appearing regularly on the Huffington Post. He is the author of a forthcoming book, Fake News, Real Politics, which looks at satire on late-night television and its effect on politics. So who better to ask about Stephen Colbert and his recent taping of programs here at these games? In fact, his dissertation is looking at John Stewart's impact on the 2004 campaign. His website for more is joecutbirth.com. Please welcome to the Planta on the Line program, Joe Cutbirth. Good morning, Professor Cutbirth.
Hi, Judge. Nice to be here.
Thanks for joining us.
Sure.
I haven't seen the Stephen Colbert program this week, and they're airing, I guess, the episodes that he filmed here last week. Have you seen them?
Yes, I've seen a little bit here and there, yes.
And how were they?
Well, I think it's classic Stephen Colbert. I think Stephen Colbert has a large following. I was really surprised, frankly. There were some of the news reports said that he had, you know, up to 4,000 people coming out. On some of the sites, it looked like, you know, the Iranians around Ahmadinejad or something. So, it looked like quite an event. You know, he really films in a small studio in Midtown Manhattan. His audience typically is a couple of hundred people. But he clearly has a very large Canadian following, despite some kind of specious things he seems to have said about you guys a few months ago.
But I think we get the satire part of it, right? The ice holes and the sort?
Do you?
Do you think we do? I think we do.
I think the Canadians have been, they're typically gracious and affable selves around that. If he had made those remarks about people in a couple of the boroughs of New York City, Queens, or Brooklyn, I don't think they would have been as forgiving.
Yeah, and in the United States, I mean, we sort of get an idea of how popular he is here. In the United States, does he resonate, I mean, in terms of the last campaign even?
Well, it's been an interesting phenomenon with Stephen Colbert, in that Colbert clearly is offering a parody of a hyper-nationalistic newscaster. Most people feel like he's patterned his character after Bill O'Reilly on Fox News. Some interesting studies in the last year or so, though, have shown that people who watch Colbert tend to kind of project their own ideas onto him, sort of like the Rorschach test, and that there is a sizable, at least a considerable number of people who are conservatives who sort of don't really get the joke. And it's really kind of interesting and amazing to me.
There must be statistics, I'm sure there are ratings, that suggest how popular Colbert is as opposed to someone like O'Reilly or even Glenn Beck. Is there a comparison there in terms of numbers?
Well, I don't know any numbers right offhand. I think the real interesting thing right there is the fact that Colbert is actually being directly compared to Bill O'Reilly or Glenn Beck. Because Stephen Colbert is clearly an entertainer. He's not a journalist and he's not a newsman. Bill O'Reilly would, and Glenn Beck would probably take the opposite positions in defining who they are and what they do. Yet in this modern time, what we see is in the eyes of the audience, there's not that much distinction. And I think that's really the fodder and the really interesting place to kind of talk about Colbert. Is from the audience perspective, why does the audience not see a difference?
And if we take the other late night comedians like Leno, Letterman, Conan O'Brien for the brief spell that he was there, have they had an effect on the politics? And in the course of your research, have you seen that? Have they had an effect on politics and current affairs, say as Jon Stewart or Stephen Colbert?
Jon Stewart and Stephen Colbert are the next generation of this idea of comedy and satire on late-night TV. Leno and Letterman kind of come out of a tradition of a much older comedian, of the previous generation, a guy named Johnny Carson.
Mm-hmm.
And how this all started, really, was this tradition of Carson and Letterman would come out and they would have an opening night monologue. And in the late 80s and early 90s, those monologues got a little increasingly political. Frankly, Bill Clinton and all of the craziness around Bill Clinton early in his campaign, early in his presidency, and at the end, really the collapse of the first Bush presidency, was so ripe for comedy that Letterman and Carson kind of started doing this, and some early studies around that, people started, like, counting the jokes, whether they could find a liberals, whether they could find a conservative, trying to read some stuff into it that I think was really probably a little excessive. But from that really kind of sprang the idea. It was when Jon Stewart took over The Daily Show in the year to about 2000, I think it was when Stewart really moved into taking The Daily Show from just kind of a general comedy show to this kind of political show that it is. And so Stewart and Colbert really, I think, were satirizing the media as much, if not more, than the politicians. And that's a little different than what Letterman and Leno do.
Well, we've had satire all along, haven't we? I mean, I think back to, in this country, Stephen Leacock, and in your country, people like H.L. Mencken, Mark Twain, and the sort. But it has gotten different in the last few years, hasn't it, in terms of the relationship between, say, comedy, satire, and politics.
You're absolutely right, John. That's a really astute distinction, astute observation that you're making there, because the idea of comedians lampooning politicians, you know, that's about as old as the wheel. That's been going on, you know, since the time of Socrates and Plato. What's new here, and what I think really is taking off here, is that Colbert and Stewart, at least I take the position, that their satire involves the mainstream media. I think what they are showing us is they're making fun as much of our media, which people think are failing us, as they are our politicians. It's always easy to make fun of the politicians, but this is the first time I think people have been, in their way, kind of showing the shortcomings of media. And I think they've tapped into the disappointment that many Americans and people in North America have with the failings of their mainstream media and with the real desire that the media would kind of return to an era where people believed in it, trusted it, where it really worked on behalf of people, not corporate interests.
Does your research show that I mean, is it a myth that young people especially get their news from comic shows like Weekend Update and the sort?
Well, it's interesting because, you know, they say journalism is the first draft of history. Those studies done by the Pew Center, and those were the original surveys when they just sort of tacked The Daily Show on with Weekend Update, in a study back in 2000, again in 2004, the finding was small. It was in the 20s. It was, you know, one-fifth of people in the age group, 20 to 29 years old, said they got some information from late-night TV. And as journalists tend to do, one-fifth of those in the 20 to 29-year age group getting some became this huge tsunami of, oh my God, young people are getting information from Jon Stewart, which is technically perhaps correct. I think that survey question has some, I think there's some questions about the way it's phrased and the way it's interpreted. Clearly, though, it means young people are watching Jon Stewart, and clearly it means young people are watching Stephen Colbert. I'm not sure how much original information you can get from a joke. There's some that might be kind of pouring a little water onto the frame, but if you don't know the characters, if you don't have any other sources of information, I'm not sure it's that funny when Dick Cheney shoots somebody in the face. But if you know the history of Dick Cheney and you've been following, you know, what a grouse he is and how, you know, mean-spirited he can be, and you've gotten all of that from mainstream media, then when Jon Stewart makes a joke about him shooting somebody in the face, it's funny, and you kind of get the joke, so you get information that way.
To the Olympics and the media's coverage of these games, have you noticed a gap between how the Canadian press has covered ourselves as opposed to how the international press has been covering these games?
You know, the big thing I've noticed is the Canadian press coverage, and let me say, I think the Vancouver Sun's done an absolutely excellent job. But I think one of the things that I noticed in the Canadian press is the Canadian press seems to be at least partially concerned with what American reporters are saying about Canada. I seem to see this notion in the Canadian press of what do the Americans think about this, that I'm not sure I'm not sure that would be the case if the games were in. I didn't see the Chinese press 4 years ago, you know, writing about what do Americans think. But I think the nature of Canada-American relations, because of the border countries and because we share some of our heritage and our history from Western Europe, I think there's a unique dialogue between Americans and Canadians, and I think Canadians see Americans one way, and I think Americans see that relationship a different way. So that's an element that's been unique, I think, to the coverage in the Canadian media this time.
And we hear about with the opening ceremony, the closing ceremonies on Sunday, a lot of sort of Facebook campaigns and the sort, wishing that there would be more inclusion, say, of our minority communities, or sort of our Asian, our Pacific, you know, because we're on the Pacific, I guess, those sort of cultures that more reflected, since they weren't in the opening ceremonies. Do you think that's media driven, perhaps? The desire for that?
Probably to some extent. Yeah, I think. But I'm not sure. I think there's merit to that. I think we should be able to have conversations about all of those kind of things as a people. I think that the salient point there is this something Canadians are talking about? Canadians of all ethnicities and heritages, is this something we're talking about, or we need to talk about? And is the media helping us have the discussion we want to have? Or, as you're saying, is the media trying to drive the discussion just so people will tune into the media to hear what the discussion is? Probably a little of both.
And there's a lot of discussion in the press about the Own the Podium program. The New York Times criticized it in terms of the death of the loser.
Right.
And it's getting some scrutiny here in this country because of Canada's lack of medals compared to the Americans, say. What do you make of the discussions of the program? I mean, I listen to Imus every day, and he's made jokes about it already.
Yes. Please don't judge American media by Don Imus. I also am a fan of his, and he's an interesting character to listen to. But you're correct, the New York Times has mentioned about this. I'll tell you, one of the things I've kind of noticed as I've been watching it pretty close, one of the things I've noticed is sometimes I see some of the Canadian reporting being a little bit over the line in terms of the possibilities, and it seems like sometimes some of the reporting kind of is setting these high bars. I was seeing one of them the other day. They were talking about I was watching one of the CTV anchors, and she was talking about, so this is an event that the Canadians likely could sweep the podium and have a 1-2-3. And I thought, do you know how rare that is in any possible event in the history of both the Summer and the Winter Olympics? For one country to get silver, gold, and bronze in one event, that's almost unheard of, frankly. And so I was listening to that, and I was like, well, no wonder there's all this angst about it. If a TV reporter is just kind of tossing that stuff out there willy-nilly, and of course that did not happen in that event. But sometimes I see, I don't know whether it's out of naivete or whether it's out of pride or whatever, but I see sometimes it feels like even the Canadian media are kind of setting the bar a little bit too high. And then there's some disappointment. Anytime you institute a program like Own the Podium, I mean, that's really kind of an aggressive name for a program, but, you know, it's an aggressive idea. So anytime you set that out, you kind of paint a bullseye on your back, you know, for people to take shots at you if you don't succeed. So I think maybe there's a game of expectations and unmet expectations in play, and the media loves to play that game. They play it with presidential speeches in America. They play it with, you know, polling numbers. They play it before debates. Who's going to win the debate? Well, people downplay their expectations in that. So that's a media game, and I think you are seeing some of that here.
Have you any thoughts on how these games will be perceived across the country? There was a piece in the Province paper a couple days ago by Stephen Marsh about how the 2010 games will be for Canada much like the Expo in 1967 was, in terms of a sort of a national defining event.
Well, you know, I think the one thing I heard as an American living here, so I have been following, you know, the cultural engagement around this for, you know, longer than I've lived here, for about 8 months now. But the early thing I heard from friends and colleagues, and the early narrative was that Canada hadn't won a gold medal on home soil. Now, that's a really good story, and they've done that. They've met that expectation. So I think PR-wise, or just in terms of the story of the Olympics, that is a good story. That's an accomplishment. And so I hate to see that get subsumed by a bunch of criticism over on the podium. And so, I think in the end, we all get really competitive once the games are going, and whether or not the hockey team wins or who wins the figure skating or the luge, you know, we can get lost in some very intense moments. But I think in the end, you know, to put on something like this for Vancouver, which is way out here west and kind of, you know, separated by some geographic distance from Toronto and Montreal and Quebec, I think this has been a great moment for Vancouver, and I think it's been a great moment for people in this part of North America. And so, sure, I think these things go down in history, and I think the Vancouver Sun's doing a pretty good job of kind of documenting that.
And our view, the view that the international people have of Canadians, has that changed at all, do you think?
I think it's changed for me. I think the thing a former student of mine who works for the British Broadcasting Corporation was here for about 2 weeks, and he and I talked every day about, you know, what we were seeing and what our perceptions of this thing were, and he's German, he's working for the BBC, and I'm American, and so we would kind of, you know, hash these things out. I think one of the things that we think is interesting, and we kind of we're talking, is kind of Canadians seeking out what does Canadian identity mean? What does it mean to be a Canadian? And I think we saw some of that in the opening ceremonies. I think that's a time when a country gets to kind of tell the world who that country is. I was sort of surprised by some of the kilts and that kind of heritage. That wasn't stereotypically what I thought of when I think of a Canadian. But I think it is a time for any country to kind of get up on a stage and show the world how it sees itself. And I think in those terms, we saw a little bit about the Canadian identity. I think what we also see on kind of a more social term is it okay for Canadians to try to own the podium? Is that something, I don't really think of Canada in international relations as being a country that's, you know, yeah, we got to win. That's not really how Canadians, I think, are perceived in around the world. And I think some of the people in the country were kind of coming to terms with, is it okay to kind of have that hubris around something like the event, like these events? And I think, frankly, some of the answers were yes. But I think Canadians kind of tested out that as a part of their identity and found that they could be comfortable competing and really kind of going for the gold, you know, and that not being over the top in kind of a way that maybe Canadians think about Americans.
This book that you're working on just sounds fascinating. When does it come out?
Not anytime soon, unfortunately. I think we're looking at probably a good year and a half on that.
I hope when it does come out, you'll come and talk to us about it, and perhaps in the meantime, you'll come on again.
Oh, well, that's very nice. Sure, I'd love to do it anytime I can help, Joe. It's been really nice to talk to you.
It has. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Professor Cutbirth he teaches at the Graduate School of Journalism at the University of British Columbia in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plenum.